Frumpkin Heineke Perek.
See that O'Ree thinks that you're awfully funny, Rich. So today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim HaKodesh, is daf Chof Gimel. And we move on now to the actual way in which we get our Bote Dinim chosen. We talked about how many Dayanim we need. Now, getting to the beginning of the Masechet once again, where we started with Dinei Momonot. So this Dinei Momonot, B'Shlosha, that we mentioned, the first words of this Masechet, how exactly do we end up finding this court of Shlosha Dayanim? So, I mean, obviously, it's all very nice if the two Bale Dinim agree, but how often do litigants agree? So, I mean, we're going to always have these arguments about, I want to go to such and such a court. No, I want to go to another court. So what is exactly the procedure for being able to select a court? Zeborer lo echad. The Zeborer lo echad. Now, what the Mishnah seems to be saying, which makes absolutely no sense, and the Gemara, of course, is going to go through and gradually examine each very strange aspect of this Mishnah. And we'll see there's a lot of weird stuff in this Mishnah. It seems to be saying that, well, one of the Bale Dinim, he has the Beis Din that he wants to go to. And then the other one, he's got a Beis Din that he wants to go to. And then they get together and they decide, all right, let's find one that we can get up together on. And they select together a third one. This doesn't really make much sense, but the Gemara is going to examine it. This is Rabbi Meir's approach. The Chachamim say, no, actually what it means is, this is what we think it means. This one of the litigants, he selects one Beis Din, and this other one selects another Beis Din, so they can't get together, but the two Beis Dins, they could select a third Beis Din, and they have the right to define which one is going to work for both. Okay, it also doesn't seem to make much sense. But in any event, Shnei Dayanim Borerim Lehem Od Echad. Now you should know that Zeh Posel Dayano Shel Zeh VeZeh Posel Dayano Shel Zeh. Each one of the Baalei Dinim can actually say, I don't like that judge, and he can disqualify that judge, apparently arbitrarily. So each one is able to disqualify the judge that was the other one's judge. Judge, I thought we were talking about the Beis Din. All of this will be discussed in the Gemara. Divrei Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim Omrim, well, you can't just arbitrarily disqualify a judge, can you? So, Ematai Bizman Shemevi Aleim Ra'ayah. I mean, he would have to bring proof that they are, maybe they're related to the other guy, or maybe they're psulim because of some other reason. But you can't just go ahead and say that they're pasul. If these were regular, assumed, normal Yisrael Ksherim, or they are actually based on Beis Din, is what we think it means, that they are accepted by Beis Din as Mumchim, then you cannot go ahead and just disqualify them arbitrarily. I mean, this again, it seems to be talking a heck of a lot. Rabbi Meir said you can disqualify them. And then the Chachomim said, no, that's only if you can prove objectively that they're disqualified. And then he goes on to say, but if they were indeed considered to be mumchim, then you can't. I mean, you just said that before. Furthermore, note that this implies, when you say if they were kosher, that the Chachomim are arguing on Rabbi Meir on this, which means that if Rabbi Meir would be saying that even if they were mumchim for Beis Din, and they were absolutely Alpi Beis Din considered to be Dayanim mumchim, that you can just go ahead and say, well, I don't think he's a good judge. Does that make sense? How would you be able to do that? Then we have another crazy piece. Zeh posel eidav shel zeh. V'zeh posel eidav shel zeh. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's totally nuts. How in the world can somebody actually disqualify the witnesses that are being brought against him? And that's great, you know. And the guy who brings the witnesses that I owe him $100,000, I can get up and say, I do disqualify those witnesses. That's wonderful. We're really going to get very far in a courtroom if you can arbitrarily disqualify witnesses. Divrei Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim Omrim, no, you can't arbitrarily disqualify a witness. It's only bisman shemivia lehem raya shem krovim or psulim. You'd have to prove that they are related, or that they're in some other way possible. I mean, I should hope so. Good heavens. Aval ima yuki sherim, eno yachol posan. You can't just go around and posel a witness. No kidding. So this Mishnah leaves an awful lot up in the air because none of it makes sense. We don't know what it means when we say this one selects one and the other one selects one. One what? We cannot imagine also what would be the machlokas about such a thing. Why would Rabbi Meir say you can actually disqualify? We do not understand what the Chachomim are arguing with Rabbi Meir about when they say, well, no, the two Baalei Dinim select each one, whatever the one is, and then it's the two Dayanim that select the other one. We don't know what that means. What would they be arguing about? I mean, is there something wrong if the two Dayanim select another one? Well, what exactly is that Machlokas? And what could possibly be the basis of a Machlokas about whether you can arbitrarily hassle a judge or a witness? That doesn't seem to make sense on any side. Okay, so ask the Gemara, let's go through the Mishnah piece by piece and see if we can make sense of it. So what does it mean when it says in the Mishnah, Zeh borer lo echad, Zeh borer lo echad? I mean, it sounds like they choose different courts. So one wants court A and one wants court B. But why do we need two courts? Betlata sagi. All you need is a court of three Dayanim. That's what we had in the first Mishnah in the Masechet. Now you're telling me, it sounds like, this one selects a court of three, this one selects a court of three, and then together they select another court of three, and now they have nine judges? No, no, no. What it means is, if they can't get together, let's say they can't get together on what court? That's how to understand the Mishnah, which is what we saw up front would make a little bit of sense. So then they can get together and find an acceptable bezdin to both of them. Shneim borim lem odafat. Can't mean you need nine dayanim. I understand. Okay, yes, that is clearly makes more sense, but it still doesn't make sense. Because how in the world can the love, he's the guy that's in debt. He's going to say, well, I don't want to go to your court. I mean, how can he say, I don't want to go to your court? Here it's saying that either of the two litigants, even the person who lent the money, I mean, even the person who borrowed the money, is able to say, I don't want to go to the lender's dayan. This halacha that you're allowed to demand that you want to go to a better bezdin, that's only if the malve, the lender, wants to go to a better bezdin. But if the love says, I don't want to have the local bezdin paskin, I want to go into Yerushalayim, and I want to have the top bezdin. Doesn't matter. Kofino tovedan beiro, he doesn't have a right to demand anything, because after all, we have that klal, eved love leish malve. The person who borrowed money is actually making him dependent on, which is usually put into contracts beferish, and any litigation for this contract will take place in the appellate court of New York, whatever. So that's put into contracts in order specifically to avoid exactly this situation. So if Rabbi Elazar says that that's the klal, that you cannot demand a different court if you are the one who borrowed the money, so then we would force him to be Dan Beiro. So how does the Mishnah take for granted that either of them can say, I don't like your court? Well, actually, we're going to see later on, you know, again, another point in the Mishnah, that Rabbi Yochanan says over there, Kiram Rabbi Yochanan, Ba'arkaot shebesur yashan. There were many places where they didn't have Botei Dinim that were actually qualified Botei Dinim of Yisrael. And what you would normally have over there is you would have a court that would be made up of people that were, you know, I mean, they had gone to yeshiva, they knew a little bit and so on, but they're like arkaot. It's like a secular court because the person was not really a dayan. And since this is all there was, so basically in such towns, they used to accept those courts. That's the local court and that's where we go. Well, that's what it's talking about in our Mishnah. It wasn't a real dayan. And because of that, each one of them can say, listen, this is not a very good court, our local court. There's another court like this in the next door town. I want to go there. So there, Enofinami, even the Loved, the borrower, is able to say, I don't think that these people know absolutely nothing and they have a history of messing up the din. I want to go somewhere else. But Enofinami, if this would be a real Besdin, and this would be Mumchim, this would be Dayanim, you can't just say you want to go somewhere else. Why should you be able to go somewhere else? So that's our first approach. Our Ka'ot Shibasuria. Rav Papa says, no, I think that we're even talking about a real Besdin, Afilatema Mumchim. But the Mishnah is referring to a specific case. For instance, Kagon Beidina de Rav Huna de Rav Chista. There's many cities where there are lots of Batei Dinim. Let's say you have two Gedolei Torah that were living in the same town, which was exactly what happened with Rav Huna and Rav Chista. They were both down the street from each other, and each one of them had a yeshiva, and each one of them had a Besdin. Fine, you could choose which Besdin you want to go to. So if one of them says, listen, I want to go to Rav Chista down the street, so then he can say, the person says to him who lent the money, he says, I mean, well, I don't have to do anything for you. After all, Eved Lo V'Lishmo Malved, he could say, and how am I causing you any trouble? Mikometarachnalach, what's the difference to you whether you turn right or turn left when you come out of your home? In that case, that's what the Mishnah means, that you can say, I don't want that Besdin, I want a different Besdin. Tana, if you read the Mishnah further, you're going to see that the way that we're understanding this makes no sense. We're now understanding that each one of them is talking about a Besdin. I don't like this Besdin, I like this Besdin. And then the two can select the Besdin that they do like. But then how do you explain the next words in the Mishnah? That the Chachamim say it's the Dayanim themselves that will select another Besdin. That's how you're understanding it, right? Od Echad. Od Echad means another Besdin. So does that make any sense? Besdin, the way you've explained it, Echad, means Besdin Echad. So now the two people have rejected the two Batei Dinim, each one of the other one. So now after we reject those Batei Dinim, now those two rejected Batei Dinim are the ones that are going to make the compromise and find the Besdin that is correct. And that they have to, does this make sense? I understand. The primary Besdin, they can say, I don't want to go to, so we'll take the both rejected Batei Dinim, and they will be the ones to find the absolutely mutual agreeable Besdin. That's ridiculous. And not to mention the fact that the language makes no sense. Zeh borer lo echad, v'zeh borer lo echad, does not say in the event that someone was borer lo echad, it says, this is what to do. Zeh borer lo echad, and zeh borer lo echad, which is ridiculous. What, I'm mechuyev to disqualify my litigants, the other litigants, Besdin? This one should say, no, I'm not going there. I mean, you should say, if the approach in the Mishnah was correct, you should say, if zeh borer lo echad, and this one doesn't like it, that's what you should say. This makes no sense at all. Your entire approach to the Mishnah is nonsensical. I'll tell you what the Mishnah means. Tachikama. In the event that zeh borer lo dayan echad, v'zeh borer lo dayan echad, in the event that there was no Besdin, and that instead they decided that they're going to create a Besdin by bringing three Dayanim together. Okay, so one of them, let's say the lender selects Mr. A. I should say Rabbi A. Maybe. Although we'll see, we don't necessarily have to be talking about, the people who are Dayanim Mumkin. So one selects Mr. or Rabbi A, and the other comes along and says, okay, I want to select the guy who's going to be taking the court that I like. This is my Dayan, Mr. Rabbi B. So then, Shneim Borim Lo Adachat. They will both have to get together at least on the third. And why is this a good idea? Maishna da'avdei hachi. So why would we do things in this way? I mean, why don't we insist that all three dayanim should be agreed and so on? I mean, why start with choosing specifically my one and the other one choosing his one? Amri b'maharava mishmei de Rebbe Zeira, mitoch shezeh borer lo dayan echad, וזה בורר לו דיין אחד, ושניהם בוררים להם עוד אחד, יצא הדין לעמיתו. The way in which both of them, the Rashi makes it very clear that this has nothing to do with the Dayanim directly, to say that the din will come out better means not that the din will come out better because each one will be trying to take the side of the other one, which is what people misunderstand and which has made a disaster out of this whole process nowadays, which I'll talk about in a moment, but it means that the Balei Dinim will accept the din because each one is going to say, well, look, I mean, I chose my Dayan myself and I agreed to the third Dayan. So that means two out of these three guys, I basically have agreed on. I mean, what am I going to say now? Complain that the two Dayanim that I like are crazy and they decided that I'm wrong. Maybe I am wrong. So in terms of the ability to accept the din, this is the best way to accept the din. Furthermore, Rashi explains, and this is what is so often misunderstood, furthermore, the Dayanim will be actually in a position of being able to be fully involved and engaged in finding why someone should be actually in the right. So what Rashi says when he says that, Hadayanim batzmim noche lafoch b'schut shneihem. It means that since normally there's a lot of pressure on a Beis Din because they know that there's going to be fights and there's going to be appeals and that people are going to say, ah, this guy was prejudiced and so on. So they really find it difficult to put out completely the way that they would like to look at the Din from the point of view of both of them because there's this pressure. This way there's no pressure. The Dayanim feel, look, these two guys have agreed on us as a Beis Din. Let's do it right. Now, in the beautiful words of the Rush, which is really strikes at the very root of the problem that has happened because of the misunderstanding of what Rashi has said. So as it says, Yetzi Adin La'amito, so the Rush's language is very, very powerful. What he says is that there are idiots, there's people who don't know how to read. They misunderstand Rashi. They think that the meaning, by the way, the way in which we refer nowadays to this process is a acronym, Ze Borelo Echad, is Zabla. So the word Zabla has become, unfortunately, it sounds a little bit like what it has turned out to be, which is, you know, a garbage dump. But Lamaisa, the process is called Zabla. So Ze Borelo Echad. So as the Rosh says, people think that Ze Borelo Echad means that each of the litigants selects a judge who is going to be acting essentially as his lawyer. And this judge is going to be trying to figure out every possible way in which he should win the case, which is insane, because a judge has no right, as the Rosh continues to say. They say, well, that's what Rashi says. Says the Rosh, Chalila v'chas, Hashem Yishmor. That's not what it means. They don't know how to read. Lo diktiku b'dvarav, he wrote this savrei harei ani birarti. Rashi writes, each one of them says, look, I mean, I selected the guy, so how can I complain? So this, at the most, would be, huso verkar. Maybe this guy thinks that the judge is going to be looking for his chos aval hadayan atzmo. Chalila lo. Limtso svara l'schuto. What is he supposed to be finding reasons why he's got a client? Either this is the din or it's not the din. But because he can persuade the other dayan about this, that would mean it's mate mishpat. It would be one of the biggest isurim. Lo tate mishpat. The point only is that since they've agreed on the composition of this person, mitok sheze biruro mevin dvarav l'ashuro. So each one of them is sure that the dayan indeed is not going to have any problem. He's going to understand everything that he says, and so on. And therefore, some say that based on the way that the Rosh has explained it, because he says the Dayanim, the idea over here is that it would be Im yesh lo shum zechut, no sevinot inim chavero. So he understands that to mean that Noach v'kol echad mihadayanim lafoch b'zchut shnehem haf b'zchut oto shelo biro, which is the pashtas. So now the question is, in the event that things have gone really to pot, and what has happened is that the process of Zabla has turned into competing lawyers, essentially, in which each one thinks that they could select the person, and that person is going to be working for them and is going to be trying to figure out how it is that they would have a right to be the ones that we Paskin like. The question is, that's Hatayat Mishpat, and as the Rosh said, and if it's Hatayat Mishpat, so then how could we have such a bezdin? It's not a bezdin at all, but it's even worse, because now they pay the dayan, in which case he's really a lawyer. So what's the status? What's the legal status even of a din that is arrived at in Zabla? Really strange. So the Aruch HaShulchan tries to find a tzad in Schus, in which it would actually be considered to be a din. And he says that since both sides are essentially agreed to this process, and even though it's completely not correct to actually have a bezdin like this, but it means that essentially they've agreed to an arbitration where each one of them has a side that is going to be paid to look into the schus of their side, and they've agreed that with the third person that's involved from both of them, that they're going to arrive at a decent arbitration. And that's basically what it boils down to, in which case they both entered into an agreement to do things that has no legal validity. But we're going to see in the next Mishnah that once both sides agree to that, they can do whatever they want. And therefore, that's really the way that it works. In terms of the halacha lemaisa, this is really very, very nogea halacha lemaisa, because the question is, when do you have a right to do this zabla? Suppose there is a bezdin in the town. Do you have a right to say, I don't want to go to bezdin in that town? I want to go bedavka to zabla? So, I mean, the Ramah Paskins, if there's a standing bezdin in a town, you don't have a right to say, well, I don't want to go to bezdin. I want to go to zabla. You have to go to a bezdin that's koveya. And he says, v'chein noagin mi'irenu, that's the way it is in our cities. We don't go to Zabla if there is a bezdin that's kavua, which is fascinating, as the question came up in New York City many years ago to Reb Moshe, and they asked him whether, so there's a lot of batei dinim in New York, you know, Agudat HaRabbanim, the Aguda, whatever, every organization has got their little bezdin with their rabbis. So they asked Reb Moshe whether in New York you have a right to demand Zabla, and because maybe it's considered to be batei dinim kvuim. And Reb Moshe Paskin that it is not considered to be batei dinim kvuim, because these batei dinim are actually, each one of them is just an organization's bezdin. But it's not as if there was a kvias of Shiva Tuveya Ir or anything like that where Koveya a bezdin. Therefore, he paskins that in New York, you are able to insist on a Zabla, even if the other guy gets a summons from a bezdin for, you know, against you and so on. You don't have to go to that bezdin. You can insist that you want to do a Zabla. But that's Reb Moshe's psak. Not everybody actually agrees to that. So the question is, what if the guy who is the lender, whatever the din was, he's the one who's suing, he wants to go to Zabla. And the defendant insists on going to a bezdin of three people that are mekubel in the town, that everybody agrees that these are big tamidei chachamim. What can you do? He says that the one who insists on going to a Beis Din of three to standard Talmidei Chachamim has a right to insist and not go to Zabla. And the question is, what's his marker? So, I mean, the explanation that he gave, this was Rav Vosner Zatzal. He said that, look, one of the basis of his psak is that Zabla is not real, because it's turned out only to be this phony arrangement in which it doesn't really work as a Beis Din. So if a person wants to go to a Beis Din, I mean, isn't that better than this Zabla? And furthermore, he tainis, why should there not be a din of a Beis Din kavua, where your particular kehila can have a Beis Din kavua, and therefore you would have a right to insist that someone in this kehila could go to that Beis Din? Would be the same thing as a Beis Din of a city. All right, in any event, as you can see, and I'm sure as you've heard and are fully aware of, this Zabla is a mess because of the fact that it's turned into a situation in which the din of the Torah is less important than the fact that you could find some kind of tzad for the other person's being the correct one, which is the opposite of the way din is supposed to work. So it's important for us to make sure that we don't make a mistake in these words that everybody misunderstands. Shemitoch shezeborer lo dayan echad, shezeborer lo dayan echad, shteyem borerim lemod echad, yetzei hadin la'amito. That is not true in the event that people misunderstand what the whole purpose of it is. Anyway, let's try now to understand what the machlokas would be between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. According to the Chachamim, it's the two dayanim that were selected each by one of the balei dinim. They're the ones who decide, according to Rabbi Meir, the balei dinim are the ones who decide that the third dayan we agree on mutually. But according to Chachamim, they are the ones, the two that were selected, they are the ones who decide who the third dayan is. So does this mean that they're arguing in the din of Rav Yehuda Merav? The honor of Yoram Rav, ain't Adim Chotmim al Ashtarim, can you Adim Michotim Imahem? So, according to the Rav, you do not sign on a star unless you know who else is going to be signing on that star. What do you want to get caught in a situation where somebody that is an embarrassment to be signed with, and it turns out that he was an Echeker, that's going to passel all the Adim? Got to be crazy not to know who you're dealing with. So, that makes sense that it would probably be true of the Dayanim. So because of that, Rabbi Meir doesn't hold that you need to make sure that the Dayanim are agreed on the third Dayan. And the Rabbanan say, no, you have to have the Dayanim to be agreed to the third Dayan, because they're not supposed to be Dayanim unless they know who it is that the third Dayan is. No, says everybody agrees that of course the Dayanim have to agree to sit with the third Dayan. Of course. That Dayanim kuliyam alo pligi to be inan. Obviously, you need for them to be comfortable to be sitting on this court. Ki plige, we're only arguing about whether you also need for the two balei dinim to agree. Rabbi Meir holds you need also the two balei dinim to feel comfortable with the third dayan. Whereas Rabbanan hold, once each of them has selected a dayan, it doesn't matter whether the balei dinim are happy. It only matters that the dat ha-dayanim, that being on, but the dat ba'alei dinim, we do not require. Okay, getting to this statement of Rav. Guf, Rav Yehuda Merav, ein ha'edim chotmim al ashtar, elim ken yodim, etc., etc. This is actually, it has backing in the Hanhog in Yerushalayim in a bright Tanya Namiachi, kach hayu nikiye ha'da'at shebi Yerushalayim osim, lo hayu chotmim al ashtar, ela im ken yodim michotem imayim. The way that people of clear minds that were careful in their hanhaga in Yerushalayim would never sign a contract, even as a signatory to a contract, unless they knew who else is signing on that contract. They would certainly not be part of a court unless they knew that all of the other dayanim on the court were the type of people that they would be proud to be sitting with. They would not walk into a wedding or to a simcha to eat in a chasna hall if they didn't know the other people that were sitting there. You can end up being sitting at a seuda, and it's absolutely embarrassing to be on the same table with certain people. So because of that, they wouldn't go unless they knew who it was that they were sitting with.
Rebbe, it's massive, so it's who they're lying in bed with. It's worse.
Right, yeah. It's actually the way that we refer to it in English. Right. Anyway, the next case. So far, what have we discussed? We've understood what the Mishnah means, Bezeborer. We've understood the machlokas between Rebbe Meir and the Chachamim about who is the one to select the third Dayan. And now we're up to the incredible statement of Rebbe Meir that seems to be saying that you can arbitrarily disqualify another guy's Dayan or another guy's witness, which is mind-boggling. So Zeh Posel Dayan Hashel Zeh. Let's take the first part. You can posel a judge? Kol kamine de posel Dayan. I understand. You have some kind of right to disqualify a judge? So here is where Rabbi Yochanan said, it's not a judge. It's arkaot shebesuri yashanu. We're talking about these types of arkaot. Arkaot comes from the word erech, which means that you're making an assessment. It's not really a din, because you don't have the background to be able to paskin a din. So those are always called arkaot, the be'erech. You know, it looks like this is the din. Okay, fine. So if that's the way that people have agreed that they're going to be tried in a city, so if you don't want to be tried by that kind of individual, and you say, I want to go to a besdin, or I want to go to a better arkaot, you have a right to. But if it's a real judge, of course you can't just go ahead and disqualify a judge. Really? Alpha Mumchim Lo, you're telling me that Rebbe Meir agrees that you cannot disqualify a real judge? So then how do you explain the language of the Chachamim that we pointed out when we were learning the Mishnah? Minikzani Sefer v'Chachamim Omrim, when can you disqualify a judge? Bisman Shemevi Raya Hashem Krovim Opsulim. If you're able to prove that they are, in fact, related or they're objectively ineligible. If they were real judges, they were mumchen in Bezdin, you can't pass them, which implies that Rebbe Meir, who's arguing on them, is saying even if they were mumchen to Bezdin, which is unbelievable. How could that be? No. Yeah, you're misunderstanding what they mean. If they were kosher people where there's no objective problem, even though they're arkaot, then they become mumchim, meaning we treat them as if they were mumchim. That's what the Chachamim are saying. You, Rebbe Meir, say arkaot shebesuria are dealt with as if they're a bunch of idiots. We say that if there's no objective reason, the fact that they're not so knowledgeable is not a basis for disqualification. And as long as they are kosher people, they are the equivalent of being actual judges. This is Rabbi Yochanan's approach. Toshma. Amrula the Rebbe Meir, and the bright that says that what the Chachomim says, Lo kol heimenu sheposol dayan shemumche l'rabin. Now, for heaven's sakes, you know how to read. Says over here that the Chachomim were telling Rabbi Meir, how can a guy come along and disqualify a judge who is a rabbin? He is publicly accepted by everyone as a real mumcha, which means that according to Rebbe Meir, even if he's a real mumcha la rabbin, mumcha la rabbin doesn't mean he really is a mumcha. It means that the rabbim view him as a mumcha. I mean, so since this is kvod hashofet, even though he's an idiot, but the point is, if people have accepted him and he is considered to be the public prosecutor or the public defender or whatever it is, so then you cannot go along and say, well, I think he's an idiot. You'd have to be able to prove that he's actually not qualified to be a judge because he's related or because he's a ganev or whatever. And it's clear from the Braita that, of course, Rebbe Meir agrees that if he was really a mumcha, that you can't pasul him. Take a look at the Lashon of the Braita that Rebbe Meir is saying. La'olam posel v'olech. Look, you can keep disqualifying every single guy that this the other Baal Din brings up until you get to a situation, Achi kabel alav beit din shemum chalarabim, until you basically have to accept something that is a Beis Din, and you accept it in this court, and then you are stuck. At that point, you can't disqualify anymore. But that means very clearly that what Rabbi Meir is saying is that you can only claim that you don't want to go to the guy up until the point that he's accepted as a Beis Din Shemum Chalarabim. So that's what Rabbi Meir says, which is exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said. No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. If we could stop here, I could accept what it was that we're understanding in Rabbi Meir, the way Rabbi Yochanan is saying. But, I mean, Rabbi Meir does not only say that. Rabbi Meir says, you can disqualify witnesses also. He puts the two together. Now, what do you mean disqualify witnesses? By definition, a witness is a witness is a witness. There's no such thing as a professional witness or as an expert witness that they say today. There's no expert witness. If he is there and he saw, expert witnesses are a modern idea about expertise, not about witnesses. We call them witnesses because we're bringing them in court. But the word, we don't use a word witness for that. The word aid means somebody who saw an event. So what do you mean a professional witness? Makes no sense. So if every witness is, for all intents and purposes, completely acceptable and professional on the same level that the Dayan would be, then how do you explain that? When it comes to the witness, it's talking about a profession, because our aid, and for all intents and purposes, you can call an aid an expert, same way a Dayan would be an expert. And Rabbi Meir nonetheless says that Zeposel Eidav Shelzev is Zeposel Eidav Shelzev. So apparently he really means you can just arbitrarily disqualify people that have no reason to be disqualified. No? Oh, come on, guys. You really think that that's what Rabbi Meir says? I mean, take a look at what Reish Lakish, the way Reish Lakish expressed himself about that supposed statement of Rabbi Meir. Reish Lakish says, are you telling me that Peh Kadosh, a holy mouth like Rabbi Meir, would say something so utterly stupid? Yomar Davar Zeh? You really believe that? And that you don't have to figure out what he's talking about? Obviously, what Rabbi Meir really said was, Zeh Posel Eido Shel Zeh. He could posel a single witness, is what he means. Not, you could posel real witnesses. Well, what do you mean, Eido Shel Zeh? I mean, are we talking about a guy brings a single witness to be able to collect money? I don't need him to disqualify it. God disqualifies him. It says it befares in the Torah. Apish ne'edim, rachmana pasmai. So I don't need Rabbi Meir. And if you're talking about one witness was coming that was going to be mechayev, a person to take a shvua, and on that basis he's saying, well, I don't accept him, the Torah does believe him. So you have exactly the same problem. So what does it help to say, Rabbi Meir says you can disqualify somebody the Torah says is the equivalent of two witnesses? He munim em and kebetrei. When it comes to making a shvua, there he has the same din as two witnesses. Ah, no. You know what we mean over here? We're talking about one witness. What Reish Lakish was saying was that in the event that he had agreed, this Baal Din had agreed, do you have a witness? If you have a witness, that's enough for me. I don't even need two witnesses. You bring me a witness that claims that I owe you $100. Now, he goes. He does bring a witness. So the guy says, well, I don't like this witness. So, I mean, that's what Rabbi Meir is saying. In the event that the only reason that this witness we would have taken seriously is because the Baal Din himself said, even if he shows up with one witness, that's good enough with me. So he can change his mind and say, obviously, one witness is not good enough for me. That's what he's saying. So, no, excuse me. Because if that's the case, then what would Rabbi Meir be saying? Maika Mashmalan. All he would be saying is that you could change your mind, right? So Maika Mashmalan, the Matzi Hadriba, you're allowed to change your mind. I got news for you. That's tomorrow's daf. Tomorrow's daf's Mishnah talks about exactly this case. If somebody has accepted a person who is not really Roy Bitzadadin, and he says, I accept him, then you could change your mind. That's what the Mishnah says. Tanina, listen to this tomorrow's Mishnah. Amarlo, if one guy says to the other, you know what? I'm going to accept my own father as my judge, or your father as a judge. And a father's not right for either of them for a judge. Or he says, you know what? You bring three shepherds, you know, herdsmen. And that's good enough for me. They'll be my judges. So Rabbi Meir says, look, he can decide and say, all right, I spoke hastily. Obviously, I'm not going to really accept that. He could change his mind. So then we already know this machlokas. How could you say that what Reish Lakish is explaining is that Rabbi Meir is repeating exactly the Mishnah that he's going to say tomorrow? Does that make sense? Gee. So, in fact, we're going to have to understand what it is that Rabbi Meir's Chiddush would be according to this. The armor of Dimi, Bereder of Nachman, Bereder of Yosef, and by the way, what it's talking about over there in that Mishnah is that he accepted his father as one of the three Dayanim. So don't try to tell me that no, that's talking about where he was accepting somebody as the equivalent of three Dayanim, but that's not what it's talking about over here. Over here, he only accepted him as one. Same thing is true over there. Rav Dimi said that's what that Mishnah was talking about. There's no difference between the Mishnah and here. Well, Zrich, we need both that Mishnah tomorrow and the way that Reish Lakish is understanding Rabbi Meir and our Mishnah. Why? Because if we would have had tomorrow's Mishnah that talks about accepting my father or your father, maybe the reason that the Chachamim say over there that you cannot change your mind is because you accepted two people who are perfectly good judges for anybody else. They're not good judges for you because they're related. So over there, it's clear that you could say that, listen, you said you don't mind that they're related to you. They're certainly very qualified to be judges. So maybe that's why the Rabbanit say you can't change your mind. Mishum da'aba ve'avicha, chazuli alma, they're perfectly good to be judges for anybody else, as long as they're not their kids. Mashain came to say, well, I'm going to accept a single eight, and that'll be the equivalent to me of two eidim. I mean, maybe over there, the Rabbanit would say, well, of course you could change your mind. Maybe they would be made to Rebbe Meir. And on the other hand, if we only had our Mishnah the way Reish Lakish understands it, I would say, Yashvina Baha, maybe the reason Rabbi Meir says that you can change your mind is because an Eid Echad is normally possible. But in that case, where you have a person who is a wonderful judge, maybe he'd be motivated to the Rabbanan, that just because he's my dad or your dad doesn't mean that we can't have him as a judge. And in that case, you cannot change your mind. So I need both Mishnayos. That doesn't bother me. Says the Gemara, but something else bothers me about Reish Lakish's approach, and I think it doesn't make any sense. Namely, if the Reisha used the word Zeposel Dayano Shalze, and this the next piece of Rabbi Meir says the Zeposel Edav Shalze. It's not a coincidence that one is in the singular and one is in the plural. So apparently, it means just what it says over here. And when it comes to the witnesses, it means exactly what we thought it meant. Two witnesses. And Rabbi Meir really was saying that you can reject two witnesses. So how does that make sense? How could you reject the two witnesses? Omar Rebbe Elazar, I'll tell you. It's talking about over here that you can't pass the two witnesses, but you want to join up with another guy. And possible, but that way you'll have two people that are going to bear witness against the other witness and possible. But of course you can't just arbitrarily be saying that you can, I reject him. So you want to actually disqualify a witness, you'd have to bear witness against him. That maybe he was a ganav for something like that. Excuse me? How can you join up with another guy when you are actually nogea be'edut? Why should we believe you to say that this witness is a ganav if by doing so, you're going to be able to get him off of your back and claim that when he said you owed $100, you didn't own anything because we don't trust this guy? I mean, you are not an impartial witness now, are you? So I don't care if there's another guy. You cannot be part of that testimony against him. Oh, Kamine, could you do that? Are you not a nogea be'edut? Omer avacha b'rei d'ravika. Well, you're right. You know what Rebbe Elazar meant? he didn't mean you're saying that he was a gunner. He meant that you were actually talking about an RR. RR means that there's some overall problem with this guy, not a specific thing that he did. And what do you mean? RR Demai. I mean, what an RR could be that he's a Goslin. I mean, is that what you're talking about? We just said that that makes no sense. Ilema RR the Goslin Nuta, you claim that he's a Ganav. Kokamine, we just said you're a Nogea Be'edut. No, it means an RR. Maybe there was an issue over here where the person that was the witness, he has a daughter that wants to marry somebody, and you go with another guy, and you're claiming that this family is actually not a kosher family in Yichus, they are Avadim. Now, it turns out, if they are Avadim, that he's not kosher as a witness. Okay, but that's not what you were coming to talk about. You were coming to talk about an RR. So Rabbi Meir says, look, you're just bringing testimony about the family status, you know? Once we accept that testimony, so then Mamela, he becomes possible for an aid. That's true. But since Hanya Mishpacha Kamisade, you've come to discuss the family, and then the Il Mamela Kopasil, that's not called a direct Nogea Be'edah, so you're viewed as an impartial witness. Whereas Rabbanan say, no, there's no such thing. If at the bottom line, what it is that you're saying is going to affect the din against you, you are not an impartial witness. So how could you be accepted? And that's maybe what they're arguing on. So it's a question of what makes a person Nogea Be'edut. That's how Rebbe Lazar explained. So we have two explanations so far. According to Rebbe Yochanan, we were understanding the first part about the Dayan, that it was based on Arkaot Shebesuria. Could not explain the second part. According to Rebbe Lazar, we were talking about an RR issue, and therefore it was only Agav that you were able, together with another person, to be able to apostle it. Now we have another approach, and that was Rav Dimi's approach in Rabbi Yochanan. And Rav Dimi said, well, you know what Rabbi Yochanan said about this? He said what we're talking about over here is where there were two different kitot of edim. So what happened? The guy comes into court and he says to the judges, well, I have four witnesses, two separate groups of witnesses that I can bring into court to show that this guy owes me $100. So Rabbi Meir, he holds, remember we had the machlokas before. What is the din if somebody claims to have proof? And he doesn't need all of the proofs that he claims to have. Can the court insist that, well, you say you've got two sets of witnesses, we want to see both of those sets. So the guy says, well, I can't find the other set. Well, you said you had another set. Well, I don't need another set. You only need one set. Well, you should have kept your fat mouth shut. You said you had another set. Remember that we had a machlokas about that, and it was called Tzorich Levarer. And I believe that Gavi, between the carrots or potatoes or sweet potatoes, actually had written that down once before, and perhaps he will sweetly write it down again just to make sure. Tzarech Levarer or Ein Tzarech Levarer. I'm pretty sure that you did, but just in case. So that was a machlokas, right? So therefore, if Rebbe Meir holds that a guy who claimed to have another set of witnesses is going to have to put up or shut up, so then the fact that you are going to disqualify one of those sets is irrelevant. Because even if you disqualified them, the court was going to force him to bring the other set. So therefore, Eino Chinami, you can disqualify them because you're going to have to bring the other set. Whereas Rabbanan say, no, maybe he can say, I can't find the other set. They hold Eino Tzarech Levarer. And therefore, you become a Nogea Be'edut if you're going to apostle the first set, because maybe there isn't any second set. That would be the machlokas. But if the guy hadn't opened his fat mouth, and you only are presenting these witnesses, obviously Rebbe Meir wouldn't have said, you can disqualify witnesses, what are you, crazy? That's exactly the way that Rebbe Yochanan understood Rebbe Meir. Omer lefanav, Rabami v'Rabasi. So Rabami v'Rabasi said something very weird. And what if there was only one set? What? Did you just hear what we were talking or not? Like, what kind of stupid question is that? Ein sham elokat echad mal. Ein sham elokat echad. That's what we just said. Amrinan, avo bekatachat. If there was only one set of witnesses, then of course Rabbi Meir would agree. You can't just arbitrarily disqualify them. No. I'm obviously, we think Rabbani and Rabbatsi are crazy. They were asking, what if it turns out that there's only one usable set? Because he does present his second group, but we were able to determine that they were related in some way, or one of them was possible in some way, and therefore you now need the first group, and this guy turns out to have disqualified them arbitrarily. So what would happen then? Do we cut out his disqualification because it turns out that there was only one? That's what we're asking. So nimtse kachnia krovim psulim. What would be the din then? That's the question. Ah, so then Rabbi Yochanan said to them, in that case, because at the time that the Edim HaRishonim had already been made, and basically what happened was that the person who disqualified them had a right to disqualify them in that sense. So because of that, you have no way to rely on the first ones because you've accepted the fact that they're not the ones he's using. And in this case, it's too late. The ones that he does have are not kosher. Some say it wasn't Rabbi Yochanan who said that. It was Rav Ashi who said that. Edim. All right, so this is actually seems to be, as we just spoke about, the same machlokas that we had a little bit before about the question of whether you have to put up or shut up. And that was what we said before was the din of tzorech levarer or ain't tzorech levarer. Now, we already had that machlokas, you know, because this machlokas between the Rabban and Rabbi Meir, are we going to say it's exactly the same machlokas we had before? Between Rebbe and Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, remember we had before, somebody comes and he sues a person who's in a piece of property that he claims is his. And the guy says, get out of here. I have a contract and I also have witnesses that I've been here for 3 years. And even if I didn't have a contract, I would still be believed. So bug off. So in that case, what do we do? So it says, Habali don b'shtaru b'chazaka. Nidon b'shtar, divrei Rebbe. So Rebbe says he needs that shtar. And Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says he can be nidon with the chazakah. And we asked over there, what do you mean? You only a chazakah? How could a chazakah be better than a shtar? And we said, no, of course, what Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel means is that he does not have to produce the shtar. He is able to use his chazaka, and the other guy can't say to him, wait a minute, he claims he actually has a shtar, and now suddenly he doesn't have a shtar, and now he's bringing a raya that he's there because he did have a shtar. Don't you think something is very fishy about all this? That's exactly the machlokas. Does he have to put up or shut up? So Rav Shimon ben Gamliel is saying, look, just because he said he has a shtar, that doesn't put him in a worse position than anybody else who's got a chazaka, so he can still be nidon b'chazaka. That means, in Gavi language, eino tzorich levarer. Masha'en kein, the chachomim hold, he is tzorich levarer. And that was Gufa, the machlok, as the Rebbe said, the machlok between Rebbe and Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. The kaim along, we explained that was the machlokas. The bitzorek levarer pligi. The question is, must you put up or shut up? That's the question. So turns out that that's exactly what you're saying the machlokas is in our Mishnah, and it's repetitive. So Rabbi Meir is saying over here that, yes, you actually have to put up or shut up. And on the other hand, the Rabbanan, they say, no, you don't. They're going like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, who says, well, he has a chazaka. Why would he have to prove that he had a shtar? That's the whole point of a chazaka, isn't it? Says the Gemara, no, it's not necessarily the same. Because, look, it could very well be that according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, it's true. According to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, there's nothing to discuss. I mean, even Rebbe Meir would say, why would I have to bring... I mean, you understand the difference between the two cases. The whole deal of a chazaka is that he's able to explain away the fact that he doesn't have a shtar. So if he said, I do have a shtar, and even so, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says, well, who cares if he said he has a shtar? the chazaka is an excuse for not having a shtar. So if over there Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said he doesn't have to produce this shtar, certainly over here, when there's no relationship at all between these two sets of witnesses, I mean, so he says he's got 10 sets of witnesses, so what? Why would he have to produce all 10 sets of witnesses? He's got two witnesses, that's all he needs. That, for sure, that's what Reb Shimon ben Gamliel would say over here. Nobody would argue about that. The only machlokas in it would be between the Rebbe Meir and the Rabbanan would be, let's say in that case, Rebbe was right, and that, well, you're going to have to produce the shtar. We're not going to accept your chazaka as an excuse for not having the shtar. Rebbe Meir would say, well, I say the same thing is true over here. You said you have witnesses? Show us your witnesses. But the Rabbanan could say that even Rebbe would agree in this case, because Atkan lo kama Rebbe Hassam, where did Rebbe say you have to produce your shtar? That's where you claim that you have a shtar and now you want to deal with a chazaka. But the whole point of the chazaka is that it is in lieu of the shtar. It's coming mikoach shtar ka'asi. If you hadn't said that you had bought the thing, it wouldn't mean anything that you were there for 3 years. But in this case, the guy's saying, I have 5 sets of witnesses. Who cares? You only need 1 set of witness. And therefore, 1 set of witnesses has nothing to do with another set of witnesses. They have nothing to do with each other. It's all independent proofs. Why would you have to bring more than 1 set of witnesses? I say even Rebbe would agree. If ani edim, lav mikach edim achrine kate, even Rebbe would be made. There is no need to prove that you actually were right to claim that you had the shtar. So he's in this case, you had the edim. So made a Rebbe. Okay, so far we've got Rabbi Yochanan's explanation for Rabbi Meir, only benogei the Dayanim, namely, that's talking about our culture of Asuria. We have Rabbi Elazar's explanation, which would explain both sets of situations, and it's talking about a machlokas about whether you're nogea be'edut, and there was another person that was made with you, and they were talking about things like there being avodim. They were not directly addressing the case. And then we have Rav Dimi, who explains Rabbi Yochanan as saying the machlokas is of tzorech levarer or not, and we'll see that there's another shita, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow, that Rabbi Yochanan didn't say precisely what Rav Dimi said. He said something slightly different. And that also was Rabbi Yochanan, to be concluded. So in the end, we're going to have 4 different explanations of how to understand Rabbi Meir here in the Mishnah. Whew, okay, sorry for holding you. But look, again, we ended up at the right time, at least if you would have been here for our mikvaot. Okay, so
and Rebbe, basically we learned this blot on the day when there we learned this blot on the day where there are people capable of being arkaos in Sura. There are Bnei Torah there. They brought in the Sefer Torah yesterday, right? It could happen today.
You want to tell me what happened? What are you referring to?
The soldiers, there are many Bnei Torah who are in Sura. They brought in the Sefer Torah yesterday. So I'm saying they're people who are capable now. If there was a need, they know enough. If, right, they, we could so have.
We now have Arkaot Pesuria, you say?
Yes.
All right. So anybody who wants to go to Kenetra and have a Dintera, you know, that's exactly where they go. Okay, wonderful. Okay, everyone, thank you so much for your patience. I hope that we won't fall behind again. But at least give me a break. These are really big dapim, right? And they're exciting. So, okay. Bezrat Hashem. Come Sunday, we'll be back to our mikvaot. Kol tov, everyone. Leitraot.